item number 5. From the Interim Director, Department of Health and Human Services, presenting a proposal for a pilot project in the community to provide specialized services for a specific population of Behavioral Health Division clients. Per adoption of the County Board Chairman's Mental Health Initiative, a follow-up report is due. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Okay. Well, go ahead. I just want to say a little bit. This report is a follow-up, I think, to a request that was made by the department to take a look at implementing the resolution that was passed by the board and really was Supervisor Holloway's resolution in terms of looking at perhaps a 16-bed, the operation of a 16-bed facility. When Ms. Lucy came on board, as we reviewed that, we have a proposal that we'd like to submit for consideration about how that proposal could be implemented and also have some real benefit and usefulness to BHD. So I'm going to let Ms. Lucy kind of talk about what we've come up with.
So when we started to think about how we would do this, we took a look at the clients that are going into our PCS, our Psychiatric Crisis Center, our emergency room, if you will. And we identified a very interesting group of clients, of 40 clients, that had both developmental disabilities and mental illness. And they had, as 40 people, they had all had more than 4 emergency room visits. And, you know, as an old nurse, I would have to say this is what we would call a high flyer in the nursing world.
Well, what does that mean?
He's a frequent user.
Okay.
And so we said, let's take a little look at who are these people and what is it that they need. And as we did a study about them, and we found that they were most of them were living in the community, and that they were having trouble staying in the community. That they were coming back to us for services and stabilization mostly. They had almost 300 emergency room visits. Of those 300 emergency room visits, only about 10% resulted in an actual inpatient stay. So this was people looking for stabilization, crisis management, and in some ways, we've heard some anecdotal talk that perhaps it's respite that families need some help. So we'd like to do a two-pronged approach. We'd like to first do some intensive in-home support with a model called an ACT model. It's called assertive care treatment, active treatment in the community at any rate. And then secondly, take a look at the development of a crisis / respite home that could be utilized for that purpose. In terms of what would happen in the community, we'd want people to develop a treatment plan, a crisis plan, a respite plan, and really begin to do some support with the clients and their caregivers about what are some of the triggers that go on, what are some of the things that could be done to help de-escalate someone quickly, what other resources might they need, and then secondly, again, look to see if we need to develop a sort of a crisis respite facility. We put in that it might be 16 to 15 beds. I think after we do phase one, we'll see how many clients would use that. We'll see what they would benefit from. It may be smaller, might be larger. Most likely, may be a little bit smaller. This really is a managed care approach or almost a public health approach to really begin to look at how can we keep people in the community, how can we prevent emergency room and even hospitalizations, and how can we help them earlier in a crisis cycle. So this is our approach, and we're in the process of thinking about how we will implement that, and I think it will also give us tremendous data and experience as we look at some of the redesign activities, as we look at, in general, how will we move more of our services into the community. This gives us some tremendous background and experience in managing a population.
And also, I'd just like to add that this is extremely important first step, because as we think about other individuals moving into the community, we need to know, for those that are already there, what's working and what's not working. We also know that the 40 individuals, over half of them, already have family care funding. So it means that they have some supports, but for whatever reason, they are still utilizing the Behavioral Health Division. And we also know that maybe another 10 or so of those individuals were individuals on the Disability Services Division waiting list who got services. So, you know, why that's also added importance is that we have some funding to help work with. And again, talking to the care management organizations about maybe they would want to fund a different model to help support those individuals differently. And this is the exact same group of individuals that we're going to be looking at moving from Hilltop if we get to some kind of redeployment of resources or downsizing initiative. So we need to make sure what's in the community is working for the people that are already living there and how we can augment that.
Supervisor Rice?
Do you have an estimate of the approximate staff-to-consumer ratio in this assertive community training model as compared to the status quo?
I don't, Supervisor. I think that we would probably be looking at a case management load that's in the 8 to 10 range.
8 to 10?
Clients to a peer manager.
What, 1 to 8 or 10?
Yeah.
Okay, and the status quo is what?
I don't know what they have at the care management organizations.
Would you expect this is greater or less than that?
Far less.
Far less, yeah. And also a different set of skills.
Yeah, that was the other question I was going to ask, is what kinds of staff might be a part of this? What kinds of people are we looking at? That aren't currently part of the mix.
Right. We need to find care managers that have experience with the development of disability population and their resources, which is different than a generalized case manager that's got a little of this and a little of that. Mm-hmm. And we'll also need to, I think, add some nurses into this mix and really create something sort of specialized for this particular.
Yeah, and this is probably, this team is going to have to also be staffed with using either a psychiatrist or a psychologist to help, and also some behavioral specialists. Individuals that have skills at working with individuals around their behaviors, developing behavioral plans, helping their support networks manage those skills. So they certainly would be far additional skills than just a typical kind of case manager. They would need some really behavioral specialist type of support, and probably working with, as Paula said, either a nurse or a psychiatrist.
My other question is just process-wise. Now, this is a report that kind of traces a new model, identifies a pilot. Where do we go from here with this now?
Our next step would really be to meet with we've been talking with the disability services, but we need to now bring the family care, as we've heard, the CMOs in to talk about this group and how we might address them. If they can address them, we need to address them, how we can create that synergy to move them forward. So that would be the next step, and then we'll go to implementing it within the next, I hope, 60 to 90 days.
Oh, okay.
That's my hope.
Yeah. And we may have to do an RFP.
Right.
I think we'll see in terms of what family care, you know, what those entities can bring to the table, and then looking at our staff in terms of how we might be able to utilize them. But the next step also could be a request for proposal.
And I would gather that there's probably some discussions about how this fits into the next 2012 budget.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I really view this work as not only helping this group of clients, but really as it looks to really developing some really foundation information about the redesign as a whole. Mm-hmm. As we're looking at downsizing Hilltop, maybe in some ways the easier thing is to move someone into the community. It's a little bit harder to keep them there, so we need to view both, mm-hmm. because otherwise our whole model will be just a revolving door, and that's not to the benefit of anybody.
And Supervisor Harris had asked earlier about the Weissman Center model, and it was very clear that one of the things they stress is it's very important to keep individuals where they are, try to support them where they're currently living, not remove them, not have them going to behavioral health division. So first, you have to exhaust that, all possibilities that they can stay where they are. And in fact, we're going to be having the Weissman Center come to talk to our small group Paula and I both heard the presentation. We've had some discussions with him in disability services over the years, but their model is strictly community-focused. And they work with providers, they work with family members, and that is their clear emphasis. So I think a lot of this will be emulated off of several of those principles that they've incorporated.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Supervisor. Supervisor Lipson and Supervisor Jersey, in that order, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm interested in, obviously I understand how this model is sort of something different than acute inpatient care. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about sort of how it fits relative to the supportive housing that we've developed and the services that are provided there. And I'm wondering what we know about the success of that and whether of this group of 40, these high service users, are many of them served by this couple of areas of supportive housing that we've developed, or is that supportive housing not providing enough for
a couple interesting things there, Supervisor.
Go ahead.
First off, about 35% of these clients are actually in with their families still in the community, and so certainly that's the ideal situation to. If the family is willing is to support somebody in their family home, that'd be great. The other about 50-some percent that are in the community and housing appear to be mostly living in adult family homes, a few at CVRS. So I don't see anybody in those in the supportive housing. So that's an interesting thing. So maybe that's one of the things we need to think about. Mm-hmm.
And this really is a different group. The supportive housing group for a lot of the units that we developed were strictly for folks who had a primary diagnosis of serious and persistent mental illness, and that model really supported them. This is a group that has a developmental disability and a mental illness, and many of them, as Paula said, are already in group homes. So they have some support. They're living with families, but the current support that they have has not been enough to keep them from rotating kind of that, revolving door at BHD. And that's the piece we want to really focus on and see why, the group home structure and perhaps they might be even in a day program, but they still are experiencing some crisis and they're showing up at our PCS.
Thanks. Professor Jersey.
Thank you. I think this is partly a demographics issue, and it's interesting in responding to Supervisor Lips that you indicated a lot of this population lives in the home. I do hear from the growing elderly parents.
Yes.
There are a lot of folks, even in the baby boom population, as they get older, and they've been caring for this developmentally, disadvantaged child, now an adult, but still needing care from that elderly parent, that they are very concerned with what's going to happen when they can no longer take care of that child. And from what I'm hearing you state, you're really, in a way, counting on the back end by looking at it from the admissions at the behavioral health hospital. I mean, I think you said you identified 40 individuals that have gone through several times possibly even using it as a respite care area. I'm wondering if there's been an attempt to try to get a better count of this population and how large it could be within the county. And my thought is, have you tried to go to, instead of counting on the back end, to count on the front end? Is there a way that you at all track through the schools when children have gone through the special needs curricula? As they, I think they can stay in the schools till they're 21. Is my correct on that? They can stay there till they're 21, and then once they age out of the schools, it pretty much becomes an issue that the parents have to address. Mm-hmm. And of course, as those parents start, and I'm not even suggesting that the parents aren't trying to do the best for these children, but they just get to the point where they physically can't do it anymore. And I know this is a real concern for those parents. It's something they worry about, stress about. I often see them in my office and trying to set up trusts for mm-hmm. such children and trying to find ways to provide for them. But the question really is, have you tried to understand what that population is? Mm-hmm. With the demographic issue of the baby boom bubble, mm-hmm. We may really see a large population in a very short time. Mm-hmm. I'll let you respond to a lot of questions.
Let me say one thing.
Make a demand. Who's going to respond?
I'll talk first.
Okay, go ahead.
Which is to say that for this group, Jerry, I'm sure I'll talk about this disability services program. Mm-hmm. For this group, one of the expectations would be that for those clients living in their family, that a plan is put together of what will happen in case of an emergency, because otherwise we end up being the you know, what is the, if a parent becomes ill, what is the emergency plan? So there is a piece of that included. Mm-hmm. That's what all I need.
Okay. And in terms of the young adults transitioning, we just recently developed a transition manual for parents, and I'd be happy to share it with you. It's actually really great. But we have an ideal of all of the young adults from all of the municipalities who are graduating from high school who will need adult services. In fact, we have a transition link. We have staff that work with the municipalities. And this is the reason why family care, the cap on family care, is so disgusting. Those young adults were able to transition directly into family care from school as an automatic link. And now that that's not available, what's going to happen is they're going to be sitting at home. They're going to be on a waiting list, which we already have, of 2,000 individuals. So they're just sitting at home, and all of the skills that they've learned and they've gotten during their high school years, they won't take the next steps. Of course, many of them might go to other kinds of training, you know, like MATC or DVR, but many of them need more support than that. And so that is something that family care can be supportive of. So that whole transition link, as you indicated, is very critical. We do work with parents about whether they need to establish guardianship, what needs to be the next steps, or power of attorney, or what they need to do. But many of them, you can transition into family care at 18. So they can still actually be in school from 18 to 21, or they can stay in school to 21 and then move into family care. And we had been quite successful this last year by having family care available, that we were able to offer parents something once they graduated from high school because of that transition that we had into family care, and now that will clearly be stopped. And also, a lot of the folks that are living with parents, they're on the waiting list waiting for services, and then they experience some kind of crisis, as you said. They're older, and then you do see some of that revolving door into BHD. And that waiting list is going to continue to grow without the ability to continue to move folks off the waiting list, and you're going to continue to see more families in crisis. And they're going to be going to BHD unless we also, as we're trying to address that.
So the waiting list is 2,000. Is that the number?
Or 2,000, yes.
But I mean, in terms of that population that could potentially fall into the safety net.
It's 2,000 waiting for family care, but the group you're talking about is probably smaller. And we'd have to really take a look at those folks who might also have a developmental disability and a mental health issue, because it's individuals that have both kind of a co-occurring disorder. We'd have to take, I think, a closer look to really kind of give you a finite number there.
And then we haven't talked about it, but add on top of the waiting list for family care, the issue of transportation and
yes.
the potential loss of transportation, because those students, once they've graduated out of high school, who do actually find programs, whether it's through Goodwill or any of the other ones, still require the transportation to get back and forth. The
mm-hmm.
parents are usually working or unavailable to provide that. And without that transportation, those things are all going to end as well.
That's right.
So I think, you know, and I really think the community isn't getting this picture, that we are on the verge of a real crisis here. And that it would be better for us to keep these services provided than to completely lose it and create this, you know, this crisis that's mm-hmm. waiting to happen in the communities. I'm not so sure we're getting that picture out. I don't know specifically what the answer is, but these things are all related. The transit issue, the family care waiting lists, and so on. And it would be nice if we could somehow put a vignette together and to try to get that out in the community to show that these issues are related to one another. They're not separate.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add that our lobbying committee is up in Madison now fighting for those issues, talking to legislators and what have you. So we're fighting up there. I would agree with Supervisor Jersey that we probably need to create some kind of communication network out in the community. I'll talk to Harold and have Harold talk to you to mm-hmm. see what we can do.
I think that would be good. We've been working with Disability Rights Wisconsin, some of the advocacy groups, but you're absolutely right. The loss of compounded with the loss of transportation is going to be a travesty. Mm-hmm. And individuals, I mean, that is the way in which they're able to be integrated in the community, participate in activities. They won't be able to get to work, won't be able to get to school. So, you know, certainly we work with Harold okay. on something. We'd love to do that.
Mayo and then Barbara Becker, would you come up? Stay there because she may have something that you guys need to really. Barbara, could you come up, please? And sit next to them, and then there might be something that you guys want to connect. But Supervisor Neal.
Thank you. This has been a very good conversation, but I really want to make sure we have the policy procedures properly. You are trying to do a program. Do we, even though you say it's information, you are changing the policy that the county board has established. Should we vote on this and say, yes, we would like you to further on going into with this policy? To change and look at the procedures of dealing with the community, have that case study that you want, I mean the pilot program of 16 to 20, because you say 15 to 20 in here, to move forward on this. I think we need a procedure for that, because it's not within the programs that we have established within Milwaukee County right now, because you have brought a number of things in there with Supervisor Holloway's mm-hmm. and some other ones. I think this is something that we make sure that the county board is on board and saying, yes, we'd like, it's very good what you're trying to do. You are still trying to make the safety net out there for those individuals. You are trying to cut costs for Milwaukee County, but also making people be accountable for themselves and they help their loved ones out. You have a number of issues that the colleagues have brought up, particularly about the transportation, particularly about the family care or the CAP. And those issues need to be more highlighted within our procedure, or within our policy, of saying these are things that we are agreeing that we want you to proceed with. And that's one of my basic questions right now. I think
Can you answer that, please?
Well, the preceding resolution asked us to come forth with an informational report about what we were planning to do. We would certainly come forth with any RFPs, and we can certainly come forth with a status report if the board wishes. There would be no problem, of course, if you said, yay, we like your plan and you wanted to vote on it, that'd be fine, too.
Yeah, I agree with Paul. I think that they're a little bit different. One is in response to, I think, the resolution and part of the mental health redesign, and the others really deal with the cuts, uh-huh. potential cuts that we're going to see that are going to impact the department and are going to have an effect on supporting individuals. So I think that it would be great to have the committee endorse this concept and then also talk about working with Harold and groups like Barbara to get the word out more about the impact of family care cap, also the potential $500 million of Medicaid cuts and transportation. All of those are going to have impact on this exact population and how we move forward.
I would like to make that motion that we will endorse this pilot program for those main reasons of okay. family care, the cap, the loss that we have coming within Milwaukee County. If we don't start, even though we're talking about it here, but if we don't start blowing the whistle and saying these are the issues within Milwaukee County and it also affects the state, even though you think the legislature, they gung-ho of you thinking that they're going to put some money back in there, they got a surplus and they come up put it towards their debt instead of helping the individuals within the state of Wisconsin to we have a safety net, I doubt very seriously. But we can go and do this. Mm-hmm. But I make that motion.
Okay. Barbara, did you have anything you want to input on this particular concept?
Yes, thank you very much, Chairman Hawaii. First, I commend the department for their commitment to moving forward in this area. I think it's very important and, could really make a huge difference by providing some different services in the community for this population. The one thing that I did want to comment on, and I think the partnership with the Wiseman Center will be very helpful with this, and in response to the question you had, Supervisor Lipscomb, and some of the talk about the community facility in this board, is one thing that they are very emphatic about in terms of their experience and research is the importance of having, you'll be successful if you have very small community settings. So I had wanted to share that. So, for example, supportive housing, that you asked about, that would not be the right fit for these individuals. And in terms of the respite facility that's being talked about, I'd encourage, again, working, with an evidence-based approach that has shown that, they're talking about, three people, that they primarily use duplexes in the community, and they're able to modify them, and there may be special environmental modifications needed if someone has behavior that's, hurts themselves or hurts the facility, special glass in the windows and so on. So they really have wonderful expertise with that. So I just had thought that would be helpful to share that in terms of the community setting, that we're talking about something that is rather small and specialized.
Okay. And Ms. Lucy just reminded me, in response to the whole issue of the Family Care CAF, we had shared with Supervisor West at agenda setting a resolution. In fact, we shared it with Jennifer as well, that was done by the State Long-Term Care Council that was supporting not capping family care. We maybe could, kind of use that as well and maybe add the issues around transportation and some of the other concerns that Supervisor Jurczyk had. So I know that Supervisor West was planning to take a look at that.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, that was referred yesterday by the Chairman's office, and Supervisor Biddle is a co-sponsor on that.
Okay.
We'll be coming to your
All right.
Supervisor Biddle, would you like to enlighten us a little bit about that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, it's a resolution that opposes the cap on family care and how it can affect the citizens of our county. So I'm directing the staff to go up to Madison and really oppose that cap.
Okay. Supervisor Mill, would you like to add on something?
Yes, I would like the wiser people to come and give a presentation. You mentioned the wiser people on a consistent basis.
Okay.
I would like to, because I don't know them.
From the Wiseman Center?
The Wiseman Center, to make
that
sure
that
we
wonderful.
Understand exactly what they're doing and what their motto is, because you keep talking about their motto. And so have a little bit more understanding.
I'm sure they'd be happy to do that.
You mean the people to roll their sleeves up as not considered elitist, but roll their sleeves up?
That's right. That's our retired academics. They get up there and they're on the board.
Okay. Could we...
watch a politician.
Are there any other questions, Supervisor Theodore?
On the motion, I guess I'm, and perhaps in light of what we now know that something else is coming, and I forgot that we have another meeting coming up. Can you clarify whether you want to move on that? Or
is this similar to what I'm talking about, this resolution that no one knew about at first?
No, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, the resolution focuses strictly on family care and the cap and enrollment and budget cuts to the family care.
Okay, I'm looking more about everything, the whole broad thing that we are supporting, one, the model, but also talking about transportation and everything else that's involved with that.
If I can add, we're never going to have a perfect model with all the things that are taking place up in the state. And we're going to have to adjust as we go. So we need to move this, because if we don't, there'll be another variable to take place and what have you. And so what I'm saying is that we won't be able to do what we did years ago and what have you, because we were sure of what the circumstances would be. We're not sure, the legislature's not sure, and so I think what we have to do is move forward and adjust as we go.
Okay.
Supervisor Lipson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if the motion is still, if you're still offering the motion, I guess I'm looking for a little clarification, because I thought I felt like it was two things, like you were talking about endorsing
their
this,
plan, is correct.
Which I feel like we've already directed them to do this, and I'd prefer to vote on it when they actually bring back details. I mean, we've already directed them to do what they're doing, which is to begin fleshing it out, but they don't yet have the model isn't fully. I mean, that's the last statement is that they'll bring back the request for proposals.
So you asked the supervisor there to supervisor Lipson to or supervisor Mayo to remove his request.
Well, I want to. Well, obviously, I wouldn't presume to tell him to ask him to remove his request, but I guess I'm suggesting that they're already telling us they're going to bring this back for a vote. So I need a clarification why we would be voting on this again now when we don't yet have the detail which we've directed them to provide us.
Okay, Supervisor Mayo, would you be able to respond to that?
Well, sure, again. Well, basically, they brought back the information for what they want to do, but it's changing the scope of the plan, even though it's not saying what the proposal that we had on the table first, of the studies, of the combined number of things. Now they are more defining and say, this is the program that we want to go. This is a pilot program that we want to proceed in. That pilot program was not in there at first. So in other words, I'm saying, well, we are endorsing what they have brought forth so far. Second of all, when they talk about going for RFP, we might have to let them endorse them and have the RFP present the RFP, go out and come back and say, this is what people are asking. Why are we going to have them present the RFP and then say put it out? If we're going to endorse the pilot program, let them bring all the work and bring it back and say, this is how much it's going to cost. This is the things that we're looking for. Also, when they start advocating for letting people understand what the issues about communication, family care, mass transit, a number of other issues that are going to affect these individuals, and the cap, we need to have that on the table and continue to move on. And I would like to keep that motion. If the committee does not want that motion to move ahead, I understand.
Yeah, I guess, well, for me personally, if you moved it in written form at our special, it would be more comfortable for me because I'm not clear that I know what you're asking me to vote on. To endorse everything that's in an informational report or, you know, that's, I mean, I read it, but it was in an informational report.
Okay. So. You guys made. Okay, we'll vote on.
What are we voting on, Mr. Chairman?
Would you just go ahead and tell them what we're voting on?
We're going to be voting on a resolution that will be brought by the committee because it wasn't before us, so it'll be presented by the committee at the board to endorse the...
At the board?
To endorse the recommendations that are presented in this informational report. Is that about right?
It's actually a standard. My endorsement. I will draw it to there. You're confusing me now.
Okay, fine. All right. Could you move to approve this, please?
No, there's
well,
no
if there's no motion, then this is an informational motion. Report and no action is
motion?
Needed.
There's no motion. We don't need that.
Right.
Okay, fine. Good.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
And I will bring up our resolution for this.
Well, just a second.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor,
I mean, if we just, the final statement says this is an informational report, so no action is necessary. BHD and DSD will return to the board with a draft RFP and an updated report by the July board meeting. I mean, that's what the report indicates. I don't see any reason why we're not waiting for that.
Right. Okay. I got you. I agree. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You'll see us again.
Is there anything else?
That's it, Mr. Chairman.
I want to say that I one time used to have human resource